It's tremendously big and tremendously wet.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 94 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I'm Ron, as always, joined by the man who usually has to pay good money to get the kind of beating that Mike Bloomberg got last night, Brian. Brian, how are you, my friend?
I'm a little confused. This is a new world that we are living in, not the world that I woke up in yesterday. Yesterday, we're recording this just for our listeners, the day after the Democratic debates. I woke up yesterday feeling very confident that Michael R. Bloomberg was going to get my vote for president. We'll get to it a little bit later in this podcast, but right now, I'm not feeling so secure in that vote.
Understandably so. Well, you know what you need, Brian? You need yourself a drink.
Drink of the week.
Na zdrowie.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Prost.
Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
So it was quite a matchup this week. We had another beer. Last week we drank Bitter Monk from Anchorage Brewing. Did not go over so well. But this week we put up their Medusa Double IPA against Wild Mind Brewing's La Reine. Can you say it like that, Brian? La Reine?
No, I'm still a little speechless how well you just handled that.
Well, a little fun fact, George Takei used to have a dog named La Reine Blanche. And he used to say it, La Reine Blanche. It's one thing I just remember.
Speaking of white dogs, did you ever see the after-school special White Dog in the 70s?
I don't believe that I did.
It was about a little white girl, probably mid-teenager, and her family adopts a white dog who apparently had been abandoned by a racist family because this white dog hated all of her black neighbors. And it was the story of her trying to retrain this dog from a world of hate to one of acceptance.
All right, and we might have to...
Really hated black people. Like, it really hated them.
Might have to add that to what we're watching later.
Much like Michael Bloomberg.
But regardless, Wild Mind Brewing, La Reine,
fell
a vote shy. And so we are drinking Anchorage Brewing Medusa Double IPA. I still have to crack mine open here. Brian, did you happen to take yours out already?
I started to pour mine. The first thing I noticed was the hazy, opaque, yellow-orange hue that it gave off. I would say it had a nice white, creamy head at first. To the nose, I picked up some citrus, tropical fruit, a little grassy hops.
Oh, very, very fruity.
But to the taste, the grassy hops are first what you pick up on. Then I would say it follows with the sweet tropical. All right, that was our dev on Beer Advocate. That was really his or her explanation. I have not tried this yet. Did you?
I'm pouring mine. I have a little too much head. It was a bad pour. Why don't you take a sip and give me your impressions, and I'm going to let this head die down a little bit. Thoughts?
All right, let's talk. First I'd like to hear what your thoughts are, and I'll tell you exactly what my comments are on this.
All right. So it is, I think we can both agree it is better than the Bitter Monk we had last week.
Hands down.
Still, it's a very, I got to take another sip. Hold on.
See, the way I would describe it is it tastes like a beer mixed with an orange juice, but they put water to water it down. Like, remember, what did we call it when you and I and your lovely wife, basically the third arm of this podcast, when the three of us went out for lunch that day and we ordered the beer with the orange juice?
Oh, we had the beer mosa.
Okay, this tastes like a watered-down beer mosa.
I could see where you'd get that. It definitely does not. The smell is great. Like, you smell it, and you're like, I'm going to have a very good experience with this beer. And then you taste it, and I would say it's average at best.
Yeah, it just does not have the. It's not hitting me like I want it to.
So I guess now we're 0-2 with Anchorage Brewing, but we will put up another poll next week. We've got a few more beers left in the Tavor crate. I'm sure we'll see La Reine back again, or maybe we'll put it up against an appropriate contender for next week. So, Brian, any parting thoughts on the drink this week?
I would like to say one thing I was very happy was I'd like that the listeners really came out to support what we're doing here with our Tavor Presents Drink of the Week. As the week progressed, we put up the poll. I didn't really think that it wasn't up for very long, just maybe about 2 days or so. And I was happy with the turnout. I liked the fact that it was pretty close to a 50-50 split for most of the week. A little disappointed that La Reine did not win, but at the same time, I was just happy that it was a fair fight. No issues with the Shadow app, no inconsistencies with a Ukrainian server. It was a fair election. It's something we do not see very much in America anymore. So I was overall, I'm happy with the way this thing turned out.
All right, awesome. We'll keep an eye out on the Facebook page for the next Drink of the Week. In the meantime, let's roll on over to This Week in Racism.
This
week
in
Racism.
So I got to say, it was looking like your prediction was going to be off again. You felt that this was the week that Shaheen Borna was going to get knocked off. He was leading most of the week, and then Hans Berglund makes a late charge at the end, really piled up the votes in the last 2 days, and takes the win 78% to 22%. So Shaheen only managing 2 wins. He goes to the bench. Hans is our new This Week in Racism champion. We unfortunately did not have a challenger for him this week. We had a couple of instances of racism, but not that good audio quality that we like to see from our contenders. So we're going to give Hans a week off. We're going to check on the racism over the upcoming week. As always, you can send us any racism you see out there through our website, RonandBrianPodcast.com. Brian, your thoughts on Hans Wynn?
Not one of our greatest racists of all time. I cannot pretend that I see Hans as a first round candidate for our year end racist of the poll. I'm imagining Tavor will present it. We'll see.
Hopefully.
But what clearly, you know, the audio will, you know, ultimately will trump the written word. The overprivileged white male getting into a Uber, deciding he should be able to sit where he wants to sit. You know, the world has just become so privileged, so entitled, that Hans Gruber over here felt that he could go into the Nakatomi Tower, take whatever he wanted. Yes, I would say Hans Zimmer this week did a very nice soundtrack for The Week in Racism. Ron?
All right, so Hans gets the week off. I mean, again, I was very shocked to see that he was behind for most of the week. But I think, again, you know, true racism always rises to the top in This Week in Racism. So, again, thanks to all the folks out there that voted in the This Week in Racism poll, as well as all those for the Drink of the Week poll. In the meantime, we've got some beefs.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Still the best bumper of all. Easily. In my opinion. My humble opinion.
Well, the idea, Brian, of combining the moos is really what... First off, it's a catchy tune. You know you're going to enjoy the tune. And then for it to hit in with the moo right at the right beats throughout, it was well done. Kudos to producer DJ Jazzy Jeff for putting that together back in the day on the streets of South Philly.
So, Brian, what's your beef this week?
My beef this week is New York City's own Penn Station and the homeless problem that it has. Last weekend, I traveled out to New Jersey on a day trip to visit a friend of mine had to go through Penn Station to take the train out, heading west. Every now and then, I dare to cross the Hudson River. And I will tell you, the homeless problem in Penn Station is out of control. There's no police presence. Nobody's escorting these people to move on. They are panhandling. They are, contributing to a garbage problem. And there's just lots of people who have set up shop on the floor to lay out and sleep, to sprawl their belongings. There's got to be a solution here. I say it's a homeless shelter. We should be rounding these people up.
That sounds aggressive, rounding them up.
Well,
where would you like to put them, Brian? Into cages?
No, Ron.
Oh,
Ron.
I'm just, you know.
Maybe you do have to put some bars on the windows of these homeless shelters. Maybe you do have to lock the doors at night to prevent them from sneaking out to do drugs. I don't know. I don't have the answer here. But I will say that 5 years ago, the homeless problem in Penn Station was nowhere near as bad as it is. It's getting worse. And my mayor, Bill de Blasio, is still thinking that he should be on the national stage.
All right. A little bit of trivia I learned this week since you talked about Penn Station. Can you tell me what the difference is between a station and a terminal?
Oh, yeah. A station is a train stop that trains go into and out of. A terminal is the last stop on a train line.
Interesting. I was not aware of that prior to this week.
That's because you're from upstate New York, where trains are not as prevalent as New York City.
All right, fair enough. So my beef this week, Brian, I got to throw it out to Facebook as my beef of the week this week. Not for contributing to the degradation of our society, not for contributing to the Russian involvement in our elections, not even because apparently Mark Zuckerberg needs to have his employees blow dry his sweaty armpits prior to a public appearance. I can overlook all of that. But this week, you know, I do some of the social media for the podcast. And, you know, every now and then it'll be like, hey, why don't you spend a few bucks and we'll give you an ad credit. So this week they were like, hey, spend 10 bucks on an ad and we'll give you a $30 ad credit. And I'm like, I'm tripling my money. I'm going to lose money if I don't spend this money. So I click on it and it pops up and it says, hey, here's a suggested post for you to boost. All right, fine. We'll boost that one. Click it to boost. A couple hours later, get a note back. We've denied your ad.
No.
You're the one who fucking told me to post it. I was going to post another one, but you said boost this post as suggested. Of course, they don't tell you why it wasn't, you know, why it was turned down. But it's just like, it's annoying to me. And of course, there's no way to like reach out to anyone at Facebook. Like no customer service whatsoever.
Was it the Facebook post where I encouraged New York City Police Department to round up the homeless people and shove them in cages?
It wasn't. Like, that much I would have understood. And, you know, that one probably would go through. It was your Instagram post of just the episode. So I have no idea what happened. Maybe they have an issue with our stance against Chardonnay flavored beers.
Oh, well, here's one my backup beef of the week was YouTube.
Okay. Really? Because
it's the fact that they arbitrarily decide which episodes they are not going to what's the word I'm thinking of? Spotlight? It's not really spotlight. Right. They won't
or even list.
They won't even host any of our for last week. They would not post the audio of our last podcast, which was Say No to Chardonnay Beer. The week before, they were absolutely fine with it. And obviously, we know that, you know, all the kids are listening on YouTube. That's where the next generation is getting their entertainment from. They're not getting it from, Scratcher or Stitcher or whatnot. They're all on YouTube. That's where the kids want to receive this entertainment. And YouTube is not letting us house our wares. It really bothered me.
And yet, Take On Me from Aha just broke 1 billion views on YouTube. So you maybe, tell me where the justice is.
Maybe it's not just the kids.
Maybe not.
Take on me.
Take on me.
Take me on.
So we kind of alluded to it at the top of the broadcast, but yes, the most recent Democratic debate took place in Las Vegas, Nevada last night. Quite a humdinger. Mike Bloomberg qualified just a few days prior based on some of his national polling. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he might not be happy that he made that debate because he got shellacked.
I think that he knew he was going to be targeted. I think the issue here is not the fact that he was shellacked, but it was the fact that he really performed poorly. He did not defend himself well. He did not have good responses. You know, there were a lot of subjects where I felt that, you know, there were the obvious attack points. He is a billionaire who is trying to buy his way into the campaign. He is the 1%. He was the mayor in New York City that encouraged the stop and frisk program. You know, what were the other ones? He's made some comments during the Me Too movement that haven't gone over, haven't aged like fine wine that I'm sure he has in his collection. But there were a bunch of things where you knew he was going to get attacked on. And what bothered me, or I guess disappointed me about his performance, was that he seemed utterly unprepared to act like a leader in those moments.
Right. His argument was that he was the only person on that stage capable of defeating Donald Trump in a general election. And if he had that type of performance in a debate against Donald Trump, Trump would wipe the floor with him.
Correct.
That privilege went to Elizabeth Warren, who I think had definitely the best performance in the debate, possibly the best performance in any debate so far. I mean, she came out swinging and struck a number of blows, not just on Mike Bloomberg, but on Bernie Sanders, on Mayor Pete, on Amy Klobuchar, Biden. I mean, she just went up and down the line kicking ass. Frightening performance.
There were so many different dynamics going on all at once that I really got a kick out of the debate because they were recurring rivalries. Like Bernie Sanders was just kind of attacking. We are right there?
Well, there's hold on. I apologize. There is somebody at the door, which does not usually happen
normally
during the recording. I know. So let me just make sure it's not an emergency of any kind. Oh, shit.
What?
Brian.
Yeah?
It's Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, is she on the warpath like yesterday?
I don't know. Senator Warren, how can we help you?
I've heard that Brian lost his virginity to a clown.
Oh boy, wow. Oh gosh. Listen, this is, you know, we if we're going to beat Donald Trump, we can't be pointing fingers at each other. We need to be on the same side.
I mean, Senator Warren, why are you attacking us?
Ron watches porn videos and pastes a picture of Brian over the woman's face.
Ooh. Once I did that. And how the hell did you even know that?
Liz knows everything.
Wow.
No one's talking about the NDA that Brian made Ron sign.
I can't comment on that. Brian, would you like to address that one?
Of course. You know, non-disclosure agreements are very common in the podcasting world. Contracts that both parties agree upon. You know, we both prefer to keep the terms of that NDA, the non-disclosure agreement, private. And it's very common. I think I believe I had made a joke that Ron wasn't too happy with, and we came to an agreement.
I have no comment on that. Senator Warren, anything else?
People tell me that Ron cries while watching NBC's This Is Us.
Oh.
Ooh, that is at least half a box of Kleenex.
The baby's blind, Brian. The baby was born blind.
Oh my God, the fact that you know that reference.
God damn you. Why won't you stop?
If you want me to go away, all you have to do is go to ElizabethWarren.com and donate.
Fine. Brian, are you going to send Senator Warren some money?
Well, I would, but first I want to go to Joe300330.
Brian, don't piss her off. We're going to give you money, Senator Warren. Just please, please leave.
Bye, bitches.
What a... Oof, we got off easy. I hate to tell you, with the, you know, she literally, and I don't know whether it was the fact that she was standing next to Bloomberg, but she within 45 seconds of the debate had a great opening line, which was that she was going after, you know, a billionaire who, you know, who's using his money to buy power, who disrespects women, who calls them, horse-faced fatties. And I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg. And he had nothing. I mean, he just stood there.
And she really, when she brought up the charges of sexual harassment against him, improper workplace behavior, and the NDAs that he has in place with some employees, I mean, he, again, that you would think, you know, he would be prepared for that. Like, he has to be aware that that's public knowledge, and, you know, anybody's going to come after him about that. And he just did not seem to have a good answer. I mean, the crowd, you could hear them boo some of the answers he gave regarding that. And I think what he said that, like, really, you know, that really, I don't want to say triggered, but maybe pissed people off is when he said, oh, these NDAs were consensual. And it's like, that's a very unfortunate phrase to use when dealing with sexual harassment, because you clearly did something that was not consensual. And just the fact that you may have paid somebody off and got them to sign this NDA doesn't take away what you did in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea of a non-disclosure agreement is I don't want anybody to know what took place here. And I'm willing to pay you a certain dollar amount to ensure that nobody finds out about it. Just the very concept of that agreement implies that you did something wrong. And Warren, I mean, I thought that you could almost sense it was the moment where Bloomberg's campaign cracked. Is it irreparable? I don't know. We'll find out in the long run. But the moment where I felt his campaign just cracked was when she sat there and said, you have the power right now to release anybody that signed a non-disclosure act and let them talk about it. Are you going to do that? And he froze. Right. Bloomberg just froze. He stumbled and he said no in a way that was unsatisfactory, because ultimately she got him so good in terms of putting him on the spot. And what she basically did was she placed him not on the stage of the leftward leaning American citizens, but she put him on the side of the Harvey Weinsteins, the Donald Trumps, the people that have done no good. And Bloomberg just was not able to put together an intelligent defense of his actions. And it wasn't even just the non-disclosures. To me, that was the breaking point. But one of the moments where I felt that he had literally just almost abandoned trying to win this debate was when they started talking about his tax returns and how he hasn't released them yet. Now, to me, the answer of I wasn't running until 2 weeks ago or whatever it was. I've instructed my accountants to put it together for releasing to the public. I have nothing to hide, and I will be releasing him, and everybody will be able to see what I have. That, to me, was the right answer at that moment. But when he sat there and said, and it was almost as if he was quoting Donald Trump from 4 years ago when he said, my tax returns are very complicated.
Right.
That was almost a direct...
Thousands and thousands of pages.
Oh, it was like 4 years ago. And that was one of the whole things that the Democratic Party was attacking Trump on, was his lack of transparency. And then, and this is where I think Bloomberg literally, took a step away from being in touch with people when he sat there and said, you know, I can't just go to TurboTax and knock out my return. Well, that's how most people do their taxes.
Well, and does Michael own some stock in TurboTax? Because that was a very good plug to have right there.
Oh, was that really what people were accusing him of?
No, I'm just curious myself.
It's a good question. It was, also another dynamic that I found interesting was Pete Buttigieg going up against Amy Klobuchar.
And I think that was kind of the matchup that was, I think, the most confusing to people throughout the night. And, you know, I think every article I read pretty much, you know, agreed that Mike Bloomberg had the worst performance of the debate. But a very close second went to Amy Klobuchar. And I don't think she expected Mayor Pete to go after her, and maybe that threw her off her game a little bit. And yeah, I mean, if you are, it also doesn't make sense why you would go after somebody below you in the polls, unless the thought process is, you know, if you can knock off, if you can get the lowest ranked person in the polls to drop out, maybe you pick up, you know, her supporters. But you're not going to do it in a way where, you know, at one point, you know, she asked him, you know, are you insulting me? Are you trying to belittle me?
But hold on a second. One of the things I picked up on, which I kind of touched upon with Liz Warren and Bloomberg, was it almost felt as if the candidates were going after the people standing next to them. And I wonder if that is not something that their strategist or advisor said makes for better television when you can see both bodies. Like the order of the stage, the way they were standing was, it was Mike Bloomberg all the way on stage left. Then you had Liz Warren. You had Bernie Sanders. You had Joe Biden, Mayor Pete. And then you had Amy Klobuchar. Now, Mayor Pete went after Klobuchar. Liz Warren went after Bloomberg. Bernie and Joe Biden were kind of going back and forth at times. Like at no point was Klobuchar really going after Bloomberg.
No, I mean there were a couple of times, but for the most part, you know, the two of them went at each other. I think, you know, Mayor Pete had two, for me, I think, very, very powerful lines. First, in his opening statement, where he mentioned, you know, he went after Sanders and Bloomberg, talking about the two people leading in the polls for the Democratic nomination, one wanting to burn down the party, the other trying to buy the party. And mm-hmm. I think that's a soundbite that can really potentially get some legs. But then in his time of going against Amy Klobuchar, because Amy, you know, her big thing is talking about winning elections and being electable and everything else. And he said to her, you know, this is a race for the presidency. If winning a race for Senate in Minnesota, you know, translated directly to becoming president, I would have grown up under the presidency of Walter Mondale.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, all right, good point.
Good point. I mean, nobody wanted that.
Walter Mondale got crushed.
Yes. And Amy Klobuchar would get crushed. I did not pick up on her having a bad debate. I thought she kind of held her own against the onslaught of Mayor Pete. I felt that she took a lot of hits on the not knowing the name of the president of Mexico. And she tried to deflect it at first because it was a direct question from one of the moderators who was from the Latino community. And I believe it was La Punta Mundial. But the point being is just the fact that it was a direct question, which was recently you were asked about Mexico. You were unable to identify the president. Don't you think that somebody running for president should be able to identify the heads of state of our neighbors? And I thought she did a decent job deflecting it. But then Mayor Pete just crushed her with the, you are on the Senate committee where you are in charge of coming to terms with trade negotiations with our partners. If you don't know this guy's name, then whose name do you know? And that's when I think, was that when she sat there and was like, are you calling me stupid?
Yeah, I mean, that's when she said, are you trying to say I'm dumb? Are you mocking me? But he made an incredibly valid point.
Which is why I thought that her defense there was incredibly stupid. Because it was almost as if she was trying to, I felt, she was almost as if she was trying to create a men can't, it's unfair for a man to call a woman out on something she doesn't know. You know, but the fact was, this is information that she should know. Right. And I thought it was a very relevant comment on him. And the fact that instead of defending herself for saying, I made a mistake, I should have known his name, I knew his name, but I couldn't think of it in that very moment. You know, she just sat there and was like, oh, are you calling me dumb? Are you attacking my intelligence? Is it because I'm a woman? And I just was like, whoa, why are you pulling that card? Like, yeah, this is a moment to take responsibility, rise above, and show that you're better than other people. And it almost felt like she started to pull the victim card.
Well, and it was interesting. She kind of started her defense of herself by saying, you know, I made a mistake, and maybe that's what we need in politics again versus the current occupant of the White House. You know, we need someone with the humility to say, yes, I made a mistake, but then goes 180 from that to defending herself to Mayor Pete. So I think she started to defend herself in one way and then completely, you know, talked back on herself afterwards.
Right. It just, it felt weak.
Now, Mayor Pete took some hits as far as from experience. You know, Klobuchar, you know, in talking about immigration reform, you know, told him, you've memorized a bunch of talking points and a bunch of things. You've not, you know, you haven't been there. You haven't been doing the work. You know, Senator Warren certainly threw at him, you know, you know, how he's got people putting together catchphrases, how he's never really been, you know, outside of small town politics. And a number of people hit him for the number of multi-million dollar donors that he has donating to his campaign. So, I mean, I think he had a good, I would say he's probably in the top three as far as the performances. But, you know, people hit him with some definite issues that I think voters may have challenges with.
What I thought was a good line that Bloomberg had at one point, I don't know whether it was afterwards or during, but he said, the winner of this debate is Donald Trump. Like, I felt like his point of, if we want to beat Donald Trump, we cannot stand up here and talk about Medicare for all. We cannot talk about how we need to end capitalism, punish the rich, and reward the poor. Like, I thought that, you know, that was an argument that he should have stuck with. Because the truth be told, I believe that. I think he's right. It's not necessarily where I want the party to be. It's not where I want my vote to be going. But I certainly believe that to beat a guy like Donald Trump right now, you need to have the middle of the road voter. You need to have the moderate on your side. And the Democrats during the primaries, it almost was just who could leapfrog and go further left. And all that's going to do is drive the moderate voters to Trump. Because I don't believe that most voters in America, and I don't want to say most people, but most voters in America, I don't think that they want free health care for all people within our borders. I don't believe they want that.
It's very possible. Yeah, it's very possible you could be correct on that.
But and I think you've got a lot of people that are maybe open-minded to a slower process in that direction, where, you know what, let's get the, you know, let's start regulating the private sector more. Let's create like a safety blanket for health, which is really what I thought Obamacare was. I mean, you know, it was, you know what, let's all chip in a little bit and help the people that absolutely have nothing. Because right. Those people have a right to get some medical care. Like, it wasn't a huge leapfrog left. I think Bernie Sanders' politics are they're dangerous to some, and they're easily misunderstood by others. There are genuinely people in this country who think he's a communist, who grew up in a world where the worst thing you could call someone was a communist or a socialist, and. Albeit, maybe in his social circle, in his world, it's okay to say, yes, I have socialist leanings. There's a heck of a lot of voters out there who think that that's basically saying, I'm a communist.
Well, and that was the line that Bloomberg got out at him. He's like, you know, he said that Sanders is the only socialist he's met that's a millionaire with three homes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's a valid point. But the Medicare for all is definitely a touchy subject. I mean, you know, like you said, Obamacare was supposed to be a stopgap for those individuals that couldn't get insurance on their own. So, you know, you would think it would be a better plan to rather try and revamp the entire insurance system is to look at the cost of health care and how do we get costs down for people? How do we stop, you know, the prices of prescription drugs in this country being 8 to 15 times higher than,
right,
than any other country? You know, I was reading an article the other week about, you know, I forget what the particular operation was, but it was cheaper for this insurance company to put their patients on a plane and fly them down to Mexico and get the treatment done in a clinic in Mexico and fly them back than it was to do the entire procedure here in the United States.
Right.
So that's a microcosm of how broken the system is.
And I think that I think one of the problems with introducing the idea of healthcare for all is that and keep in mind, these are very complex plans where, you know, it's just the fact that, you know, people are seeing their medical costs skyrocketing and they're being left with a sense of, am I going to be paying for other people's medical care? Am I, you know, are my costs going to go up so that my neighbor who currently cannot afford healthcare suddenly has it? And I don't want to do that. I'm already paying enough.
I mean, I would have to imagine, or I would hope, that the majority of Americans out there, A, don't think anyone should suffer or die by not having access to proper health care, or B, that families shouldn't have to lose everything and go into bankruptcy to pay for medical care. You would hope a majority of Americans out there support those concepts.
But how do we get there in a way that doesn't?
Well, I don't know. What's challenging is that, you know, the folks on the right who are against providing universal health care, you know, have managed to, you know, tap into that anger in a lot of the middle class and a lot of these red states, you know, and misdirect their anger. You know, should your anger be at someone who's made $7.25 an hour minimum wage for 15 years and would like to get a bump up to a living wage? You know, should your anger be towards that illegal immigrant that came here trying to make a better life for himself and is taking a job that, frankly, no American wants? Or should your anger be directed at, you know, the millionaires of this country that have pushed politicians into place to give them tax breaks, or major corporations that pay nowhere near their fair share of taxes?
I think it is one of the devices that has been used by the wealthy against the middle class is to place them in a position where they have either the lower class to identify with or the upper class to identify with, and not wanting to identify with the poor, you have a middle class that identifies with the wealthy. You've got people who are struggling on a month-to-month basis to pay their bills, who are bastardizing, like you said, the minimum wage employee who requires some sense of assistance from the government to get by, while celebrating a guy like Jeff Bezos, who is a multi-billionaire with just a ludicrous amount of money, and is, like you said, not doing his fair share in helping the rest of society keep some standard.
Right. Well, I mean, you've got people, you know, you've got families of four living in you know, a trailer home, each of them sharing one prescription of insulin while they watch the Kardashians and the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills on TV and think that's a lifestyle to aspire to.
And then be like,
oh, they're going to take, those immigrants are taking away my jobs. Like, no one is out, you know, doing the jobs that immigrants come here to do. Like, I think it was Stephen Colbert a few years back actually went out and did a migrant farmer's job.
I remember
for a
that
day.
He picked fruit.
Yeah, and he's like I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And these folks do that, you know, 6 or 7 days a week for years on end. And it's not, you know, and people are, middle class is fine going and buying oranges or apples or whatever the produce is for cheap prices because the farms are paying cheap labor to get those into the stores.
Of course.
And then bastardize the migrants that give them that luxury.
Yeah, I mean, I felt that the moment where you could tell that the whole argument was bullshit was when you had the Trump administration take over, and they immediately started talking about how they were going to cut off temporary work visas, and then immediately issued a waiver for the agricultural department.
Of course.
Where it was just like, no, we don't want illegals coming into this country and taking our job. Well, except if they're here to pick fruit. Then
those guys
it's okay.
Will allow.
It's like, wait a second, that's bullshit. Because if you genuinely are against people from other countries coming here and taking our job, then it's got to be across the board. Then you've got to say to that person in Wyoming who's, like you said, buying cartons of cigarettes and bitching about them. No, you can go get a job now. Like, there's a job. Go get it. Oh, you think you're better than working in a... Like, go to a slaughterhouse. Who's working in a slaughterhouse now?
Sure.
It's all immigrants.
Not Americans.
No, nobody wants to sit there and decapitate cattle and skin them seconds after they've been obliterated. No, nobody wants to do that. That's why... And it's... The system has failed. It's getting worse. And I just feel like this batch of Democrats that are running, I don't see how they are going to be the influence that's going to make it better.
Well, I think you would have to agree that if there is one clear, hands-down winner last night, it was the makeup artists.
Oh.
Because there was more pancake on that stage than at any IHOP in the country.
Okay, I'm going to say this. I recently got a new television.
Okay.
I thought that the clarity of the screen was what I was seeing. Like, my television was over 10 years old. So when I saw Joe Biden, when I saw Joe Biden come up for the first time and they showed his face, and it was something worthy of Donald Trump.
It really was. Like, he definitely had an orange hue to him last night, except around his eyes, which
yes,
were pale white.
Which is, then that's where you could see that it was bad makeup. And I just sat there and said, oh, wow, these TVs have really gotten good.
And Mayor then, Pete needed to shave before that debate. Because
oh,
he
really?
Had a little 5 o'clock stubble going on.
Maybe he's trying to appear more manly. Maybe he's trying to say, listen, I may be gay, but I still have testosterone and I grow facial hair like a big boy.
There you go. Could be.
I don't know, but it really was a fascinating debate. I'm glad I watched this one.
It was definitely the best debate so far, and we'll definitely have to check out the next one whenever it comes up.
My question for you is this. I'm not asking you who you will vote for, but if the election were today, which of the Democrat, and obviously you may vote Republican, you could go Donald Trump, you could go to a third party. Of the 12 people that were on the stage yesterday, who would you vote for?
Honestly, I would have no issue voting for Elizabeth Warren after last night.
All right. Okay.
She was probably the only person on the stage that gave me a good amount of confidence in their ability to lead the country.
You know what? I agree with you, and my fear is that she cannot beat Donald Trump. Is that I don't believe, and I know this goes back to the Bloomberg argument, which I am trying to shake myself of, which is the fact that looking at the group of people that were there, who is the best candidate? Who has the best views? It's Warren. But Warren versus Trump, who do I think wins? And I think Trump wins. I think he masters the Electoral College, and I think he gets people who sit there and go, I just don't like her.
Here's where my mind goes, is that 4 years ago, we were sitting here saying, there is no way Donald Trump beats Hillary Clinton. No way.
Agreed.
In hell. You know, he's got a puncher's chance. Listen, I... you know, you've got a lot of people, and again, as he continues to do things like, you know, these presidential pardons, you know, continuing to the tariffs that hurt the farmers. I mean, at some point, you know, his firewall has to break, and you know, we'll see if that's going to happen in the next 9 months.
What do you mean by firewall?
Well, I mean, he has these voters that he feels he has locked up that are going to support him regardless of what he does. You know, I mean, is his famous quote of he can go out on Fifth Avenue in New York City and shoot somebody.
And
if
look
he can't hold that electorate, if those, you know, again, and it's not even a case of, you know, the voters that voted for him necessarily switching and voting Democrat. If enough of those people that came out to vote for him that wouldn't normally have voted, if they just stay home because they're sick of the process, you know, it damages him as well.
It damages Trump?
Opinion. Yeah, right. I'm saying if they get so disenfranchised with him, like they can't bring themselves to vote for an Elizabeth Warren, but they're just so sick of his bullshit that they're just going to say, you know what? I'm just not even leaving my house come election day.
See, I think that this election gets decided by the minority vote. I think that
no doubt about it.
I think that over if you look at the last elections, that especially 2016, is that if the minorities went out and voted the way they supported candidates, Hillary would have won. But she didn't connect with them enough that made them come out and vote.
Okay.
And I'm not saying you're lazy.
I don't argue with that point.
I do not want you to misinterpret what I just said, is that all minorities are lazy, because that's not what I said.
I took that to mean that you're blaming the blacks.
No, in a way, but not for the type of reason you are. What I'm saying is just the fact that if you look at the Republican Party, if you look at their base, it is a shrinking percentage of the total populace. Is the fact that if you can go out there and get a coalition of different groups that don't necessarily agree with each other, but disagree with one opponent, you can win the presidency. And I think that is, and I think that the mistake that Hillary made in 2016 was that she took a lot of those parts of that coalition for granted. And
no,
she didn't connect with minorities and assume that they were going to vote for her, because minorities vote Democrats. And what happened was a lot of them stayed home. I think she sat there and assumed that college students vote Democrat, but she didn't connect with them, especially after what she did with Bernie.
She turned a lot of people away with that.
Who was?
I'm not opening that door again. Don't worry.
Ron.
Anyway, so not to belabor the point on the debate, but we also had the sentencing of Roger Stone today. 40 months he got. 3 years, 4 months. Did he get enough? Too much? Too little? What's your take?
I was happy to see that the judge ignored the updated sentencing recommendations from Bill Burr, Attorney General. I was happy to see that the judge ignored the tweeting barrage coming from our president. You know, not necessarily going with the 8 years, but also not letting Mr. Stone walk away. I like the fact that the judge in his sentencing sat there and made a comment along the lines of truth still means something, and this man did break the law and therefore should be punished for it. It's, you know, I felt like it was sort of like a middle of the road verdict. It wasn't one extreme or another. What I think it'll be interesting to see is whether Donald Trump will pardon Roger Stone.
Sure. And, you know, right now, you know, Roger Stone remains a free man because he filed a motion for a new trial because of some comments that one of the jurors on his previous trial had made. I think this actually, you know, gives, if he gets a new trial, I think it gives, you know, President Trump the luxury of not having to provide yet another presidential pardon, of which he did many this past week. I mean, I think 11.
A whole slew. 11 now, pardons.
Again, to be fair, he is nowhere near the number of pardons that other presidents have given. I think he's done 26 pardons in 3.5 years, mm-hmm. and other presidents have certainly done more. You know, I guess in looking at some of these pardons, some of them don't make sense, you know, and even some of them, you look at, what's the guy from Chicago there, Rod Blagojevich?
Blagojevich.
All of the Illinois GOP said, don't pardon this guy. Like, he literally is part of the corruption you say you're trying to get rid of, and he commutes his sentence and pardons him.
But what do most of these people have in common is the fact that they have all made the argument of, I did not do anything wrong. My actions were misunderstood, and I have been persecuted by the Department of Justice. Like, Blagojevich?
Yes, that sounds about right.
His argument was, I was caught on tape saying that this was too good of a opportunity for me to give away free. But
right.
nowhere
got a,
was there
a golden opportunity here, and I'm not going to fucking give it away for free.
And nowhere was there any evidence that he received anything in return for a Senate nomination. Now, basically, just for those listeners that forgot, Rod Blago, I'm not even going to, you know, butcher his name again, but he was the governor of Illinois when Barack Obama gave up his Senate seat for so that he could focus on his presidential campaign. Now, the law states that, you know, in an instance where a senator vacates his seat, the governor nominates someone. Now, the Illinois governor here was caught on audio by a FBI investigation declaring that he was going to trade this nomination for a Senate seat for some type of exchange of either monetary gains or some type of service. Now, nowhere was he ever caught on tape actually in the process of those negotiations. Nowhere is it shown that he received anything in return. So his argument has always been, you recorded me in a conversation where I was talking out of my ass. I never committed any crime. I should not be in jail. And from Donald Trump's logic, he's absolutely right. Here's a man that was railroaded by the FBI and was punished for something he never did.
Well, and one thing that's interesting is two themes, it seems to be one or the other with these pardons. Either the people that were pardoned had family members that donated money to the Trump campaign.
What?
Or, yep.
What?
Or he pardoned people that were convicted by the Department of Justice when it was led by Democrats.
I think that it has always been the case that if you are buddies or you have family members or friends who are buddies with the president, you will get off. I think the, was it Buddy Rich? The Clinton drummer? Got off? Yeah, Buddy Rich.
Yes, Buddy Rich was, again, and this is not to say that Bill Clinton didn't do this, that Barack Obama didn't do this. I mean, this is not
everybody
something
does
that you
it.
Can point at President Trump and say, you know, but for President Trump to be the one who's saying, I'm working to fight corruption, and that was his big defense against his impeachment over the whole Ukraine deal, is I'm fighting corruption in other countries, but I'm apparently condoning corruption in the United States, is what the message these pardons kind of sent to some people.
And this is where this guy has balls, is the fact that he's declaring that these people didn't do anything wrong, that he has created such a cult of personality in his supporting base that if he sits there and says Rod Blagojevich did nothing wrong, his followers will sit there and say, yeah, the FBI railroaded this guy. He did nothing wrong.
Well, it's going to be, again, an interesting year ahead of us leading up to the election. We have to see who else he's going to pardon, what else he's going to try and get away with.
And this is the part that scares me, is the fact that usually presidents wait until after the election for where they're no longer going to be held accountable for their pardons. Usually pardons take place on, you know, in the last month of somebody's presidency. Here's a guy who is 7 months away from a general election, who is so brazenly pardoning criminals, people who have been convicted. It's as if he is setting he is sending a message of, simply because you are convicted in a criminal case, I don't think you're guilty, and therefore you should be free. He fears no sense of repercussions whatsoever from any of his actions anymore.
Well, and he continuously pisses off the courts, but yet then goes to the courts because he has to get things done, and then is shocked when the courts don't support him because he flaunts the rule of law so much.
Yes, and then he sits there and tells his people that the court system is broken. It's as if he has sat there and generated this overall dialogue that he is the only voice of reason and everything else is madness. We should disregard it and break it. This is as close as we've gotten to a wannabe dictator in my lifetime.
No question about it.
He has no respect for the separation of the different branches of government. He has no respect for the fact that there should be any checks and balance on his power. And what I've seen over the past 4 years is that there hasn't been. The Congress has bent over backwards for him, and the courts are, for the most part, afraid to take him on.
Yep. Let's put that subject to rest, as well as all of the celebrities we lost this past week. It was another rough week, Brian. A number of celebrity deaths. None in the death pool, though. We've only still had two deaths in the death pool: David Stern and Kirk Douglas. But we are waiting to see who else might pass away in the death pool. But in the meantime, novelist Charles Portis, best known for his bestseller True Grit, died at the age of 86. Fan of Portis, were you, Brian?
I'm going to say that some of my favorite memories of high school was sitting on the number 7 train coming from Queens into Manhattan. The hour and a half where I got to sit on the subway with my Walkman, listening to a Sony disc that was playing, and being able to read, I read True Grit, when I was a freshman in high school. But I mean, there were so many other pieces of fiction that he put out. I mean, Norwood, Dog of the South, Masters of Atlantis, my personal favorite of his, a collection of some of his shorter work, Escape Velocity. I think I read that twice senior year.
You are nothing if not a scholar.
And a liar.
Yes. Also passing away this week, this one hurt, Larry Tesler.
Oh.
A lot of you may not know, but he worked with a gentleman by the name of Tim Mott to create a word processor called Gypsy. And what Gypsy is best known for is coining the terms cut, copy, and paste. We would not have those things today if it weren't for Larry Tesler. So they will be obviously cutting and pasting him into a grave sometime soon. So rest in peace, Larry. We will miss you.
Big ups. And also, speaking of big ups, actress Janae Dubois passed away.
Which I didn't realize she was in the show, but she also sang this intro song to Good Times.
Oh, no. I thought she wrote the song to the Jeffersons.
Was it the Jeffersons? Am I
yes,
confused?
She sang,
you may have to correct me here.
Ron, not all black women sing the same. She starred in Good Times, but sang the theme song to the Jeffersons.
Oh, well, then I was confused. Well, thank you for correcting me. But she passed away at what age?
She was 74, but public records indicate she may be older.
Okay. Push her aside, her passing. But the one thing I always remember when I hear the Good Times theme is on the Chappelle Show, when they did the contest to see, who knew most about like African American history, and trying to identify the lines in Good Times, and Hanging in a Chow Line was the one that everybody got hung up on, and no one knew that. Hanging in a Chow Line, Good Times.
I honestly think that may have been, at least in terms of the way it resonated, that was probably the best television show of my lifetime.
I would agree with you on that. But anyway, passed away, like you said, at 74, was on Good Times from 74 to 79. So rest in peace, Janet Dubois. And finally, and I know this one hurts you more than the rest, Brian, Cy Sperling, the founder of the Hair Club for Men.
I'm Cy Sperling, president of Hair Club for Men. And remember, I'm not only the Hair Club president, but I'm also a client.
Passing away in Florida today at the age of 78.
Now, I grew up in the 80s when his commercials for the Hair Club for Men were plastered on television. And he always had that lazy Queens Long Island accent where he kind of like mumbled some of his words. But his whole thing was, we are going to use your hair to grow hair. And, you know, the before and after photos, you know, for of people who had grown frustrated with toupees and were looking to grow the kind of hair where they could, you know, actually live life, you know, to its fullest. He gave a lot of men hope in a time when being bald was unacceptable. Cy Sperling, we all thought you were dead. Apparently not, passing away at the age of 78 in Florida. Like I said, Florida, a great place for old people to die.
And at its height, Hair Club for Men was bringing in $100 million annually. And then he sold the business in 2000 for $45 million. So not a bad lifestyle for him.
How do you know how tall he was?
I don't.
Well, you just said in his height.
You're out of control.
Thank you.
You little stinker. All right. Well, people really seem to respond to this new little bit we did last week called What Are You Watching? So, Brian, this past week, what are you watching?
I started the second season of Narcos Mexico on Netflix.
Really? How I could never get into that show. How is it?
Oh, my God. Hold on a second. Are we talking Narcos or Narcos Mexico?
Well, just Narcos.
Okay. First off, is it the subtitles? Is it okay. your borderline hatred of Hispanics? Like, what is it about Narcos that is it your cocaine addiction when you're in your mid-20s?
That might have something to do with it.
So the whole idea of Narcos is the first season, it is the rise of Pablo Escobar.
Correct.
Second season, the fall of Pablo Escobar. Third season is we shift to the Cali cartel. We started Medellin, and then we go to Cali. And then after that, it's like, all right, maybe I think we've spent too much time in Colombia. Now let's go and watch the rise of the Mexican cartel, which in many ways we are addressing now. We are dealing with, as Mexico seems to have taken the forefront in the brutal violence of the drug trade. Where was it that it didn't resonate with you?
You know, I couldn't put a finger on it, but it just wasn't something. I watched it, and I just didn't find it interesting.
How much of it did you watch?
I probably got through two or three episodes.
Do me a favor. Try it again. It's one of my favorite television shows of the past few years.
All right. If you're saying it, I will give it another
chance. I love it. I absolutely love it. First off, I'm a sucker for anything about the drug trade. Always have. I also like the fact that it takes place in the 80s. So there are, you know, it feels like, you know, a callback to an age when I was much happier in my life. And it's also really well done.
All right. I will give it one more shot. So I watched a few things this week. First off, I watched the movie Parasite. Which obviously, ooh, we know, really cleaned up at the Oscars this past year. I liked it. I don't know that I necessarily agree with it being the best movie of the year, but I thought it was very well done.
I heard that it was a really good movie.
It's different than what you expect it to be, but it was very entertaining. The ending I kind of have issue with, but I think overall, if you like film, it's a great piece of cinema.
Just to show you how little I am exposed to what's going on in cinema today, I genuinely thought that the movie was a horror movie about an alien.
Well, you're a little off, but I would encourage you to see it anyway.
And this weekend I was talking to a friend of mine and who had seen Parasite and walked me through the story, and I sat there and said, I want to watch this movie.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story. It's very well done, very well acted, beautiful cinematography. You can definitely see why it won a lot of awards. I also watched the first four episodes of the Star Trek Picard series, which, again, I was a very casual fan of Star Trek Next Generation, but this is very well done. Even if you are, if I'll put it this way, you don't need to like Star Trek. You just need to like Patrick Stewart and good TV shows. And I
now think this is on Disney Plus. This
that is on actually Plus? On CBS Access.
And you're paying for that?
I can't comment on that either way, how I may have received these episodes, but I will highly recommend Star Trek Picard. And then also on Amazon Prime, I watched the first two episodes of Ted Bundy Falling for a Killer.
Ooh. How was that? I heard good things about it.
I'm really enjoying it, and what I like about it, and this was their intent, they tell you this in the beginning of the first episode, is everything you see about the Ted Bundy story focuses on Ted Bundy and doesn't focus on the victims. And while obviously, yes, you need to tell the story of Ted Bundy in these shows, it also goes into the story of the women he killed. And the lives he affected. And it also really speaks to the, you know, how women were portrayed in society at this time that he was committing those murders. So it really helps put everything into a very historical perspective as well. So
interesting.
Very well done. I highly recommend it.
All right. I like it.
I am paying for my Amazon Prime membership. I will go out there and say that.
Now, my question to you is, are you paying for Amazon Prime for the video benefits of it, or because you like free next day delivery?
I mean, I like the whole package. I get the free next day delivery, I get the Amazon Prime, and I get the Amazon Music on all of my Alexa devices.
Okay.
And I even subscribe to Kindle Unlimited, so now I can read Unlimited on my Kindle app too.
Allegedly, you're not a big reader. It's just something I heard from people that live with you.
I'm working on it. I'm trying to get back into it. All right. Okay. Anything else for this episode? I mean, we've really burned through a lot of time here. We would like to thank our special guest, Senator Elizabeth Warren. She was a little rough on us, but we appreciate her stopping by anyway. Make sure you check out our Facebook page for the upcoming Drink of the Week poll. As always, go to RonandBrianPodcast.com for all things Ron and Brian, and you can also subscribe to our Patreon there in the upper right-hand corner of our homepage. Perhaps if we got more subscribers, we'd have better impressions. Just throwing that out there. Brian, anything else you got for us this week?
Nah, other than the fact that I absolutely love you, I love doing this once a week with you, and I can't wait to do a Patreon episode with you.
All right, love you too, my friend. Let's head over to Patreon land.